We're going to continue now with our occasional conversations that bring you recommendations on DVDs worth renting. This morning we brought in David Simon. His many screen credits include The Wire on HBO. He created it. He also co-produced and co-wrote a miniseries about the beginning of the Iraq War, Generation Kill. He's been connected with so many other programs, including Homicide, and he's on the line. Welcome to the program, David Simon.
Thanks very much for having me.
You've got a list here that you've sent us of movies that you love, and you start with Paths of Glory. Stanley Kubrick is the director, and Kirk Douglas is the star. What's it about?
It's a World War I film, and it's about a French colonel who is confronted by his superior officers with the insistence that he select men and kill them as examples. So it's from the point of view of middle management, which is a point of view that I very much love. where the bosses are all bastards and good help is hard to find.
I'm going to have 10 men from each company in your regiment tried under penalty of death for cowardice.
Penalty of death?
For cowardice! They've skim milk in their veins instead of blood.
Well, that's the reddest milk I've ever seen. My trenches are soaked.
That's
that
just about enough out of you.
What it really is, I think, is the most important political film of the 20th century. I've come to love not only the film, but the book, Humphrey Cobb's novel from 1935. He was a World War I veteran and wrote, I think, a magnificent piece about man and institutions and what happens in the modern world, in the postmodern world, between individuals and the institutions that they serve or are supposed to be served by them. And I think it's elemental, and I stole liberally from it for The Wire.
What makes that film, black and white, not too long, not too epic in scope, the most important political film of the 20th century?
Well, it really is about what happens when institutionalism becomes paramount and the paradigm becomes what can you do for the institution, not what is the purpose of the institution or how can the institution serve you or serve society as a whole. Now, if you look at everything from what's going on Wall Street right now to how we got into Iraq, it's the same echo. You know, in season two of The Wire, one of the characters said, you know, we used to make stuff in this country, build stuff. Now we just put our hand in the next guy's pocket. That was a stevedore in Baltimore, but he could have been one of the French soldiers.
Well, now, were you also inspired in your work by another movie on your list here, The Wild Bunch, 1969?
Yeah, I have to confess, The Wire writers had a contest of how many lines of dialogue from The Wild Bunch we could get into season two of The Wire, and I think we quit at about 20. I eventually made a tape of all of the moments back to back and sent it to Waylon Greene, who wrote that screenplay, with just a one-word note that said homage. But the greatest line, I think, in that movie and maybe in American film is the very simple one of
"Let's go."
Before the carnage at the end, spoken by Bill Holden to Warren Oates. And he doesn't explain it because the film has explained it. And it's a moment of great restraint by a writer. And when I got to meet Waylon Greene, I said, you know, how did you manage to not write any more than "Let's go"? And he told me about these heroic battles and to prevent the guys at Warner Brothers from ruining the film with an explanation about why these guys are going to go to their deaths. And so I not only love the film for what it is, I love it for the writers having fought and won.
Fought to not write as much.
Right. Well, I can talk to you about films that I think were ruined in the last moments by explaining too much. Something The Wire was rarely accused of. But, I mean, you know, you look at The Hustler. I love The Hustler as a movie. Paul Newman, 61. Mm-hmm. But when he's playing pool at the end with Jackie Gleason,
yeah,
and he's come back to beat him now. He's grown as a person. He understands the world. He's suffered loss. He explains winning.
That's the way he always told me to play. It's safe. Play the percentage. Well, here we go. Fast and loose. One ball. Corner pocket. Yeah, percentage players die broke too, don't they, Bert?
Yeah, that scene should have been silent. That should have been done with looks, with eyes, with a word here or two, with a gesture. It's heartbreaking.
So that's a movie that did not make David Simon's list of recommended DVDs. And there's another movie here that did, actually. It's a concert film from 1964, the Tammy
Teenage
film.
It stood for Teenage Music International. It was filmed in Santa Monica in 64. I think the movie came out a year later. It was in the theaters for like a second and died. Really what I love about that film is the last 12 minutes. The James Brown Band and James Brown and the Famous Flames come out. It's the end of his set. It's like Night Train, Please, 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 Try Me. From when he was at his height, from when he was everything. It is a triumph of American entertainment, of American cultural power, you know, African-American music at its height. I mean, it's maybe our greatest gift to the world is African-American music. You know, never mind baseball or constitutional government. You know, flatting the third and seventh note and sending it out into the world has probably been, you know, if America's remembered for anything, it'll be for that. And here it is. It's so perfect. And then these scrawny little pale-faced white boys have to go on after him because the Rolling Stones in 1964 are the last act up.
Uh-huh.
And you can see they're terrified. And what are they going to do to top what just happened? They're derivative of that music, but they're nowhere close to James Brown's authenticity and talent. And they're standing out there, and they got to play a Chuck Berry song. And in the last analysis, they somehow manage to do it. It's sort of this moment of what the power of rock and roll was and its transformation by sort of young white kids post-war. And I just think that those 12 minutes are like everything that rock and roll was about.
Do you find yourself relating to that moment or identifying with it because you as a writer throughout your career as a journalist and as a screenwriter have dealt so often with African-American characters and tried to put words in their mouths?
That's very clever. I had not thought of that at all until you just said it. I don't know. I think I identify it with it as a kid who played guitar in bad bar bands and bad garage bands and never really had the talent. To, you know, I mean, I'm like every other frustrated kid with an electric guitar in his closet. I think what James Brown does in those at the end of that film, as far as human endeavor, the equivalent of, you know, I don't know, as far as American endeavor, it's like raising the flag on Iwo Jima or landing on the moon. It is magnificent. It is a triumph of things that could only happen in America.
David Simon is creator of The Wire, among other programs. Mr. Simon, great talking with you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
All aboard for Night Train!
Complete box sets of The Wire and Generation Kill are out this month. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
Miami, Florida!